this computer. Okay. All right, I think we're ready to go here. Now, Otter, I'll pop in here in a second, probably. What am I hearing? Oh, when this is, oh, you got your earphones in. Okay, that's what I heard. Okay, hello everyone. This is Dr. Raj Paul, and tonight we are going to start a new paper, paper 130 on the way to Rome from the Urantia book. And that starts on page 1427 of the original book, or paper 130.01 in the rest of. So let's get started. Diane, you want to start us out?
On the way to Rome.
Unmute first there. Well, they can hear you, but they can't see you if you don't.
Okay. I hear myself. On the way to Rome, the tour of the Roman world consumed most of the 28th and the entire 29th year of Jesus's life on earth. Jesus and the two natives from India, Gonad and his son,
Ganed.
Ganad
Ganed.
left Jerusalem on
And
a
it's Ganed,
Ganad.
Ganed, and Ganed.
Okay.
Ganed. Not Ronan.
Not going in. Oh boy.
Okay.
Okay. Left Jerusalem on a Sunday morning, April 26, AD 22. They made their journey according to schedule, and Jesus said goodbye to the father and son in the city of
Charax. Charax. Yeah.
Chuddux on the Persian Gulf. On the 10th day of December the following year, AD 23.
Okay, so now we're introduced to the two that Jesus would spend almost 2 years with, Ganed and Ganed. The Ganed was the father and Ganed was the son. It's hard to keep track when you first start reading this, but it becomes more to your liking as it goes on. But
It's easy to know the difference.
yeah.
It's in reverse order. G-O is the father.
Yeah.
G-A
Is the
should
son.
come first alphabetically, but he comes second, so it's in reverse order.
Okay, let's really confuse everybody now. I can't hear.
I
You
managed to
can't
do
hear
that
anything?
for you.
Probably because your earphones are dead.
Oh, okay. I'll just hang in here.
No, what we need to do is you need to put your headphones up.
What?
Put your earphones up,
Okay.
and I'm going to change this
And it's
audio.
okay. It's all right.
No, I don't want you to go through the
I can
entire
read.
meeting not being able to see, hear anything.
But I can read
So
fairly.
I can turn my hearing aids off and put this on the external speaker. Mac Mini speakers. Here we go. All right, somebody say something.
Hi.
Something.
There we go.
Hey.
Should be able to hear that, right? You hear that okay?
Heard that.
Okay. All right. So let's go on to the next one. Pan. Oh, let me kind of explain this map a little bit. Jesus met the two and they left from Jerusalem and first went to, let me get this where I can see it myself. Make this a little bit bigger. If I can make it a little bit bigger here. There we go. Now I can see it. They went to Joppa first, which is in this area right here. Okay. And then they made their way up there.
No.
Jesus,
Down.
huh?
They follow the currents because
Yeah,
clockwise.
that's up from where they were. Okay. They went up first. They weren't in a boat yet. They were still walking.
Oh wait, they
Oh.
started in Jerusalem,
Oh
right?
yeah.
When
Started in Jerusalem, and then Jesus teaches a merchant from Mongolia in Anaxius. I think it's in a shipyard so small I can't read. And then they went to Joppa where Jesus did a discourse, which we'll read tonight on Jonah. And that's further down here. Okay. And then when they went to, got in the boat, went down along the path they went. Okay. And y'all can look at this map later. And this is another where they went each and every day. Where it is in the book. You can look at each and every one of them. Okay.
Amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing. Okay, so let me get my mouse back down here. I know this is real exciting for people that's just watching this. Excuse me. From Jerusalem, they went to Caesarea by way of Joppa. At Caesarea, they took a boat for Alexandria. From Alexandria, they sailed to Lycia in Crete. From Crete, they sailed to Carthage, touching at Cyrene. At Carthage, they took a boat for Naples, stopping at Malta, Syracuse, and Messina. From Naples, they went to Capua, I think it is. Hence, they traveled to the Appian Way to Rome. They traveled the Appian Way to Rome. So that's their course. All right, Pam, would you take the next one?
Sure. After their stay in Rome, they went overland to Tarentum, where they set sail for Athens in Greece, stopping at Nicopolis and Corinth. From Athens, they went to Ephesus by way of Troas. From Ephesus, they sailed to Cyprus, putting in at Rhodes. On the way, they spent considerable time visiting and resting on Cyprus and then sailed for Antioch in Syria. From Antioch, they journeyed south to Sidon and then went over to Damascus. From there, they traveled by caravan to Mesopotamia, passing through Secus and Larissa. They spent some time in Babylon, visiting Ur and other places, and then went to Susa. From Susa, they journeyed from Charax, from which place Gonad and Ganad embarked for India.
Okay, so it gives the pretty good breakdown of where they went. An interesting point I wanted to make is I believe it was Cyprus, the island of Cyprus that was once connected to the Garden of Eden.
Wow.
So the mountain of Cy main mountains of Cyprus was where the Garden of Eden got its water from the runoff from the mountains in Cyprus. I'm pretty sure that's correct. I'd have to look on the our original site that breaks down where they think the Garden of Eden actually was. Another interesting point is Ur. They visited Ur, and Ur was just above the location of the original Dalmatia. So all the descendants that was around Dalmatia for the Caligaster 100 actually moved when it went into the sea. They actually moved up to Ur, and that was the main civilized place for hundreds of thousands of years after the downfall of Dalmatia. So that's kind of interesting too.
And
So,
where Abraham hailed from.
Ur, wasn't it? Yeah,
Yes.
yeah. So he was one of the descendants, probably from the original Dalmatians there that lived around the first oh, not paradise, what am I trying to think of? Garden of Eden, right? The
Yeah.
first Garden of Eden basically was supposed to be built at Dalmatia for the Caligaster 100. The second Garden of Eden was supposed
No.
to be for Adam and Eve, right?
No, the first garden was at Cyprus.
Right.
The second one moved inland
No,
toward
I'm not talking about the
Euphrates.
Garden of Eden for Adam and Eve. I'm talking about the gardens for the Caligaster.
Dalmatia.
Yeah, for Dalmatia, the gardens of Dalmatia.
Yes.
Right.
Persian Gulf.
Huh?
Persian Gulf.
The Persian Gulf, that's right. But the Garden of Eden for Adam and Eve were the one that was attached to Cyprus. The landmass was joined by the on the edge on the other side, right? And it was the landmass that sank first that, made it impossible to get to the original, the second garden. Actually, it was the first garden for Adam and Eve. The second garden came later. Okay. Rodney, would you take the next one?
Yes, but I've got to make you aware I'm bound to mispronounce some of these towns and
Oh no, that's not, you got to be perfect
But
every
then I've
time.
always called the father Gannad and the son Ganed.
Yeah. Well,
So,
do what you want, I
okay.
mean,
probably either one. I
just try to avoid calling him gonads,
Yeah, Gannad.
and people do that all the time. So you can call him Gannad or gonid or whatever you want to do, but it looks like it's pronounced Gannad, right? Like, nod of the Caligastic group. Okay.
So it was while working 4 months at Damascus that Jesus had picked up the rudiments of the language spoken
One of
by
these.
Gannad and Gannad. While there, he had labored much of the time on translations from Greek into one of the languages of India, being assisted by a native of Gannad's home district.
So this is where Jesus really became familiar with the Indian tongues, right?
Fortunately.
By doing this, and that way he was able to actually translate for his father and teach his son in their original language. So he got had
And
not.
this will be what we're doing, going from language to language when we get to the mansion worlds.
That's exactly right. When we first hit the mansion worlds, we will have already started to learn the local universe language, right? Because by the time we get off of Satania, we'll have the local pretty much mastered, and we will be working on the Uversatung, which is the super universe language. Okay? Lot to it. All right, let's see, Gary, would you take the next one? I know he's laughing. He's muted too. We can't hear you, Gary. It's because it's a big one, isn't it, Gary?
And I was on time.
That's right.
All righty, let's go. On this Mediterranean tour, Jesus spent about half of each day teaching Gannad, and acting as interpreter during Gannad's business conferences and social contacts. The remainder of each day, which was at his disposal, he devoted to making those close personal contacts with his fellow men, those intimate associations with the mortals of the realm, which so characterized his activities during these years that just preceded his public ministry.
Okay, so this is his start on being socialized into the other cultures of the world. Okay. Gosh, I've got this all messed up on my screen. I did not get a permission thing from Ollie to Otter. Anyway, I'll take this one. You can take the next one, dear.
Okay.
From firsthand observation and actual contact, Jesus acquainted himself with the higher material and intellectual civilization of the Occident and the Levant. From Gannad and his brilliant son, he learned a great deal about the civilization and culture of India and China. For Gannad, himself a citizen of India, he made three extensive trips to the empire of the yellow race. So he was very, very familiar with the Chinese people.
Interesting.
Hey, Roger,
Yeah.
chat is showing me that Otter is paying attention,
Oh, is it? Okay.
dictating.
Okay. So it did connect. Yeah, it didn't ask me. Oh, I know why it didn't ask me for permission. I don't have it on the other browser tonight because the other browser crashed out on me. Okay, always technical stuff. Diamond.
Canal.
Oops, I'm not muted.
Okay. Canal, the young man.
Oh, we can't move the speaker on. Just mute me. Don't hear me through this mic. Mute yours.
Now you're both muted.
Yeah, can't hear.
Try it one more time.
Let me see. Canal, the young man, learned much from Jesus during the long and intimate association. They developed a great affection for each other, and the lad's father many times tried to persuade Jesus to return with them to India, but Jesus always declined, pleading the necessity for returning to his family in Palestine.
Okay.
So,
right. Are you muted? Okay. So Jesus got very attached to the
Come in.
Couldn't even think of his name. And vice versa. Being a 17-year-old, he was a young man and he was just, you know, developing his own personality and that sort of thing. So it was very fortunate for both of them. All right. At Joppa. Pam, would you take this one?
Discourse.
And don't make it a whale of a story, okay?
Discourse on Jonah. Who did swallow Jonah, Jojo? Whale did. Okay, during their stay in Joppa, Jesus met Gedaliah, a Philistine interpreter who worked for one Simon, a tanner. Gonad's agent in Mesopotamia had transacted much business with this Simon. So Gonad and his son desired to pay him a visit on their way to Caesarea. While they tarried at Joppa, Jesus and Gadia, well, that's a new one, Gadia became warm friends. This young Philistine was a truth seeker. Jesus was a truth giver. He was the truth for that generation of Urantia. When a great truth seeker and a great truth giver meet, the result is a great and liberating enlightenment born of the experience of new truth.
And there's a picture of the lake they were talking about. Now, this is, can you read that okay?
I think so.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. You want to take the next?
I can squint.
All right.
One day after the evening meal, Jesus and the young Philistine, is that right?
Yep.
Strolled down by the sea. And Gedaliah, not knowing that this scribe of Damascus was so well versed in the Hebrew traditions, pointed out to Jesus, the ship landing from which it was reputed that Jonah had embarked on his ill-fated voyage to Tarshish. And when he had concluded his remarks, he asked Jesus this question, "But do you suppose the big fish really did swallow Jonah?" Jesus perceived that this young man's life had been tremendously influenced by this tradition, and that its contemplation had impressed upon him the folly of trying to run away from duty. Jesus therefore said nothing that would suddenly destroy the foundations of Gedaliah's present motivation for practical living. In answering this question, Jesus said,
"Let me finish this part of this, Rodney, because if we do a, if I do a short on it, it won't do it with your voice on. I only do the shorts on mine, so that I'm not putting
okay,
them
yeah,
on
no
the
problem.
Shorts. So, and I'd like to put this out as a short. So
okay, cool.
My friend, we are all Jonahs with lives to live in accordance to the will of God. And at all times, when we seek to escape the present duty of living by running away to far-off enticements, we thereby put ourselves in the immediate control of those influences which are not directed by the powers of truth and the forces of righteousness. The flight from duty is the sacrifice of truth. The escape from the service of light and life can only result in those distressing conflicts with the difficult wails of selfishness, which lead eventually to darkness and death, unless such God-forsaking Jonahs shall turn their hearts, even when in the very depths of despair, to seek after God and His goodness. And when such disheartened souls sincerely seek for God, hunger for truth, and thirst for righteousness, there is nothing that can hold them any further captivity. No matter into what great depths they may have fallen, when they seek the light with a whole heart, the Spirit of the Lord of heaven will deliver them from their captivity. The evil circumstances of life will spew them out upon dry land of fresh opportunities for renewed service and wiser living. Well,
That's renowned.
that is really renowned. That's pretty good advice, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the best in. I never understood the Jonah thing. I've heard
Well,
sermons on it, but
it's
this
interesting
tops
that
it.
he, instead of just breaking down the whole story and telling him it was just a myth, he told him a story that actually benefited him in what he believed. And that's an important thing, right?
Like a
So he didn't,
parable.
yeah, it's a parable, really. He didn't break down what he already believed, but he enlightened him as to what the truths of it were, right? And that's what he needed to do. Okay, let's see, Pam, would you take the next one, please?
Yeah.
Oh, wait a minute, you just read.
Yeah. Well,
I need to go to Gary. Yes.
okay. Ready? Gadesh, is that saying that
Gedaya.
right?
Gedaya.
Gadiah was mightily moved by Jesus' teaching. And they talked long into the night by the seaside. And before they went to their lodgings, they prayed together and for each other. This was the same Gadiah who listened to the later preaching of Peter, became a profound believer in Jesus of Nazareth, and had a
Miracle.
thank you on whatever he said. Argument with Peter on with Peter one evening at the home of Dorcas.
Dorcas. I'm glad I don't have that name.
Yeah. And I'm having a hard time talking.
Adiah.
And Gedaliah had very much to do with the final decision of Simon, the wealthy leather merchant, to enhance Christianity.
Embrace.
Embrace Christianity. Okay, so they became pretty good
Embrace.
friends and talked late into the night then, didn't they? All right, let's go on to the next one. In this narrative of the personal work of Jesus, his fellow mortals on the tour of the Mediterranean, we shall, in accordance with our permission, freely translate his words into modern phraseology, current on the on Urantia at the time of this presentation. So they paraphrased him, in other words. Okay, dear, you want to take the next one? Can you read that okay, dear?
I don't know.
I can't turn it off, it's too hot.
Okay.
Jesus' last visit with Gadara.
Are you muted?
Roger, you need to mute.
Yeah.
Need to mute. No, I can't mute. She's reading into my microphone.
Oh.
Oh.
I'm muted. Okay. Jesus' last visit with Gadara had to do with a discussion of good and evil. This young Philistine was much troubled by a feeling of injustice because of the presence of
A
demons.
little bit louder. I can't get that down any further.
Strangely, we start over again.
Yeah, you can start over. Yeah.
Jesus' last visit with Gadara had to do with a discussion of good and evil. This young Philistine was much troubled by a feeling of injustice because of the presence of evil in the world alongside the good. He said, "How can God, if He is infinitely good, permit us to suffer the sorrows of evil? After all, who creates evil?" It was still believed by many in those days that God creates both good and evil. But Jesus never taught such error. In answering this question, Jesus said,
Let me take that part there.
"Okay.
Just to make a short out of it. My brother, God is love. Therefore, he must be good. And his goodness is so great and real that it cannot be contained, the small and general things of evil. God, that it cannot contain the small and unreal things of evil. What now,
Go
dear?
ahead, I'm sorry.
Unreal things of evil?
Yeah, you didn't
Right?
write that down.
Okay, let's start again.
I'm sorry. Well,
My brother, God is love. Therefore, for he must be good, and his goodness is so great and real that it cannot contain the small and unreal
didn't bring
things
that
of evil.
properly.
What?
I apologize. My wife was talking in the background, and I
It's
didn't
okay.
have her muted.
Let's try this one more time. My brother, God is love. I don't know that part. Therefore, he must be good, and his goodness is so great and real that it cannot contain the small, unreal things of evil. God is so positively good that there is absolutely no place in him for negative evil. Evil is the immature choosing and the unthinking misstep of those who are resistant to goodness, rejectful of beauty, and disloyal to truth. Evil is only the misadaptation of immaturity or the disruptive and distorting influence of ignorance. Evil is the inevitable darkness which follows upon the heels of the unwise rejection of life. Evil is that which is dark and untrue and which, consciously embraced and willfully endorsed, becomes sin. Pretty wise, isn't it? Okay, Pam, would you take the next one, please?
You want to switch it?
Oh, I'm sorry, dear. Okay, try that one.
Yeah. Your Father in heaven, by
Well,
endowing you.
that's the wrong one.
Oh.
I think I skipped. Give me a second. I hit something, got this off all messed up. Okay, there we go.
Okay. My Father in heaven, by endowing you with the power to choose between truth and error, created the potential negative of the positive way of light and life. But such errors of evil are really non-existent until such a time as an intelligent creature wills their existence by mischoosing the way of life. And then are such evils later exalted into sin by the knowing and the deliberate choice of such a willful and rebellious creature. This is why our Father in heaven permits the good and the evil to go along together until the end of life, just as nature allows the wheat and the tares to grow side by side until the harvest. Gadiah was fully satisfied with Jesus' answer to his question. After this, their subsequent discussion had made clear to his mind the real meaning of these momentous statements.
You notice how in the statement Jesus teaches us that In order for sin to appear, you have to make a deliberate and knowing choice. Did you see that?
Yeah.
Have to be conscious of it.
You have to be conscious of it. So you can go along and do evil things and that sort of thing. It may not necessarily be sin, but if you choose to do those things against the will of God, then you are sinning because you knowingly are making those missteps, right? That's what they're
Can
called.
you enlighten me on the first part of the section? I kind of missed it. I don't know how.
Well, what do you have a question about it?
Your Father in heaven, by endowing you with the power to choose between the truth and error, created the potential negative of the positive way of life, but such errors. But such errors of evil are really non-existent until such time as an intelligent creature wills their. I guess I'm all wet.
Well,
I
what they're
just
trying
wasn't
to
understanding that as what you said. Now
do.
that I reread it, I have answered my own question, so I'm sorry to interrupt.
There you go.
No, that's fine because it's people make this error to think that evil is all around us, and it's not. Okay? There is no evil equal to good in the universe, and that's where we come from as humans. We think that there's this evil force that's just as strong as the good, when that's not the case at all. Evil only gets its legs when a human being makes a willful choice to go down that evil pathway. So you could be living in a the things evil going around you, but as long as you stay true and you stayed till the with the will of God, living through those evil areas and evil things, you are still doing what you're supposed to do. Okay? So let me give you an example of that. A good example of that is war, right? If you're in a war, you have all these horrible, terrible things going on all around you, people killing each other, destroying each other, raping people, killing children. I mean, it's just a horrible, evil situation that you're in, but your life in that situation does not have to be evil, also. You see what I'm saying? Because you can live a holy, God-filled, doing the will of God, even being in the center of all those things going on. And if you don't think that's true, why do you think they send ministers with every troop that goes out? Because when these men come in from going on these journeys to kill people and stuff, they have to have what when they come back? They have to have restitution to sanity once again because it's insane. If you imagine going out and killing people and doing all these horrible things, you're living through an insanity. And if you don't get this return to consciousness, return to God, and return to living a God-living or God-involved life, then it could make you crazy.
Hey, Roger.
Yeah.
We were created as will creatures. And so, because of that, there had to be a way for us to choose.
Yes.
And we learn from our mistakes.
That's right.
The only way we can learn.
If there was no choice, we would be living in a life of what? Probably light and life, wouldn't we?
Yeah,
If there was no choice, everything would be perfect all the time.
and we would never know a potential negative.
That's exactly right. We wouldn't gain the experience. That's why they will not let people that who have not lived a human life become finaliters, okay? Because you have not learned the daily lessons that you have to learn as a human being by choosing unless you experience it yourself, okay?
On the job training.
On the job training. And that's also why, if you think about it, when the children gets to the nursery worlds, They don't become finaliters, do they? None of them. Because they don't get the experience of choosing good over evil, because their entire existence from childhood up to 16, they live in a perfect society. So their choices are not there to choose between good and evil. The only choice they have to make that's important is survival and going on, and that's it. But they don't gain the experience of normal people. And without that experience of normal people of choosing, they don't qualify for finality.
So a child that is born, I mean, dies prematurely, say,
Yes.
at the age of 10, they can't ascend to God.
They can't ascend, but that's pretty old for a child to get there, Gary. I would say it would probably be more the children 5 and below. Between 5 and 10, you have to make choices, right?
So if you're 16 and you die, you have a choice to become a finaliter?
Yes. Yeah. At 16, you'd have enough experience to qualify as a finaliter. Okay, but the trouble is these children that are raised on the father's world grow up in a perfect environment. They don't have to choose every day between what is good and what is evil, even though they have thought adjusters. So since they don't have that opportunity of choice when they choose to go on the ascension plan, when they get to paradise, they become paradise citizens, but they do not qualify for the finaliter core because they don't have the experience of a normal human life. Does
I
that
mean,
make
I think I would be very happy with that status.
Oh yeah, I mean, if you're becoming a paradise citizen, you're in like Flynn anyway, but you wouldn't be used as a finaliter to go back to the worlds that are barbaric and things like that and try to train people because you didn't get the experience to do that. Right.
You wouldn't be taught the lessons to resist and the self-control.
That's exactly right. Now, let me give y'all an example of making the wrong choices. When the Caligaster 100 were recruited to come back to Earth, okay, they were citizens of the system capital, Jerusalem. Okay, so they had gone through all seven of the mansion worlds, so they had deleted the mark of the beast on them, and all this other stuff had already happened. They became Jerusalem citizens. Now, why is this important? At that point, they should be stable enough to resist any kind of temptation and evil, shouldn't they?
Of course.
You know, it makes sense. But 60 of them, when they got back to this planet and Caligasta rebelled, 60 of them chose the way of Lucifer and Caligaster rather than the way of the Father. Okay? So talk about horrible, terrible choices. Can you imagine getting all the way to Jerusalem and ready to go on with the rest of your Marantia career? And you come back to a planet for about 250,000 years, or about 200,000 years, and you make a decision to go against what your whole entire existence was about.
So, Roger, so they made it all the way to Jerusalem, and they had not merged with their
They had not
adjuster yet.
merged with their adjuster. There's some beings that get all the way to the system capital without merging with their adjusters. Okay?
Maybe they were sent back so they could
learn a lesson.
Learns lesson. That may be exactly why they were chosen to go back, because they hadn't merged with their adjusters. Okay? Because all their adjusters remained
Beyond.
on what? On the capital. Every single one of them. So all 100 of them did not have adjusters when they came back to the planet. So when they came back to the planet as a human being again, they did not have the benefit of the father whispering in their brain all the time and building their soul.
Well, that
You
sounds
mean this
like
was a test?
catastrophe,
I mean, this
right?
was okay. You've gone this far, but you haven't accomplished. You're merging with your thought adjuster, so maybe there's something wrong with you. We're going to lend you go back.
And learn the lessons you miss. Yeah.
Yes, and that is, he was cleansing the core, maybe.
Well, you can call it whatever you want to, but when they came back, 40 of them stayed loyal. Okay. So they did what they were supposed to do, right? They followed the will of God because they had learned the will of God in the transitions of going through the mansion worlds. Right? They knew what was right and wrong. They knew following Caligasta and Lucifer and Satan into rebellion was wrong. Anyway, you
So
live.
they lost sight of their end goal.
They did. Now, let
Yeah.
me tell you what's so horrible about this is this. Even though they gained all this experience of going through the mansion worlds and become a Jerusalem citizen ready to fuse, okay? Instead of going on at this point, because of this rebellion, they have to be adjudicated. And if they refuse to accept their repentance, what happens to them?
Erasure.
Annihilation. That's right. What a waste.
Can
What a waste.
I ask you a question
Yeah.
that you sparked in my mind when you was talking about war?
Yeah.
Somewhere in my mind, I remember in the book that if you're in a war type situation and you got to fight for your own survival, it's okay.
Yes, it is. It is.
Huh? I,
It
you know, it is, because I believe in the Christian and I may be wrong here, so feel free to straighten this, set me straight. But in the Christian belief, even you shouldn't kill, even in war, and I'm not.
Well, you're not supposed to, but if you're put in the situation, there are certain situations where it's acceptable, you know. If you kill to save someone else, that's the highest thing you could do. If you get killed trying to save someone else, that's the highest sacrifice you can make. Okay,
Yeah,
so
but
that's the
it's
way it works. When I went in the Navy, Gary, I was a full fl I had already made the decision to become a minister. I was just 16 when I made my decision to become a minister. Okay, so when I went in the Navy at 17, I went in and I request told them, I'm really a conscientious objector to this Vietnam War. Okay, I'm an objector to any war, but I will serve in any position you can put me in where I do not have to directly kill another human being. Okay,
So
so
what did they put you in?
I was a they put me in as a jet engine mechanic first. Okay. So I was in a support situation, but on my record, it stated this person is a support personnel. Okay. And they will do that. They will allow, at least they did when I went in during Vietnam. Okay. They put you in, they may send you right in the middle of battle. A lot of the jet engine mechanics ended up in Vietnam, right in Vietnam. You have to fix planes in Vietnam too, you know. But the thing of it is you're not put sent out on missions where you directly have to come in contact with killing another person. Okay. They used to call that a conscientious objector, but those turned into the people that ran to Canada because they were afraid. Right? We all are going to die of something. It's not the fear of death. It's the fear of knowing that it's morally and spiritually wrong to take another human being's life. Right? But it works the same way in your life every day. If someone breaks in my house and threatens to kill my wife, do you think I would not put them down? I would. You know?
I have a similar situation here with my granddaughter.
Yeah, we had somebody trying to break in the door a couple of weeks ago, you know?
Wow.
So you just never know what's going to come in life, but you have to know before those things happen, what would be your reaction, you know? And my wife and I were talking about it the other day. I told her if someone got in my house and they threatened to kill us, I would drop them in their steps right there, you
Oh, yeah.
know? I'm a very spiritual
Wouldn't
person.
hesitate.
I don't believe that. I wouldn't hesitate, though. I wouldn't. So, anyway, I won't do it to save my own life, but I'll do it to save my wife's life. And that's all. That's getting off the subject. You're way off the subject.
I do the same thing for you.
Yeah, I should do the same thing
Yeah.
for you. So, anyway, let's go on. I forgot who's reading next.
Think I am.
Okay, Rodney, you want to take the next one?
Yeah, once you change it.
Oh, I thought we. Oh, okay. That's it. Caesarea.
At
Caesarea.
Caesarea.
Yeah.
That's
It's really Caesarea. It's named
what I
after,
thought. In Italian, Caesarea.
it's
That's
named
there.
after Caesar, though, so it should be
Yeah.
Caesarea. Yeah.
Okay, Jesus and his friends tarried in Caesarea beyond the time expected
That's an interesting translation,
yeah.
right?
Because
Did
of
they have a cesarean section there? Yeah.
well, and that's where it came from.
Okay.
beyond the time expected because one of the huge steering paddles on the vessel on which they intended to embark was discovered to be in danger of cleaving. The captain decided to remain in the port while a new one was being made. There was a shortage of skilled woodworkers for this task, so Jesus volunteered to assist. During the evenings, Jesus and his friends strolled about on the beautiful wall which served as a promenade around the port. Gned greatly enjoyed Jesus' explanation of the water system of the city and the technique whereby the tides were utilized to flush the city streets and sewers. This youth of India was much impressed with the temple of Augustus, situated upon an elevation of and surmounted by a colossal statue of the Roman Emperor. The second afternoon of their stay, the three of them attended a performance in the enormous amphitheater, which could seat 20,000 persons. And that night, they went to a Greek play at a theater. These were the first exhibitions of this sort Gned had ever witnessed, and he asked Jesus many questions about them. On the morning of the third day, they paid a formal visit to the governor's palace, for Caesarea was the capital of Palestine and the residence of the Roman procurator.
Okay, so Jesus got to meet the Roman procurator there too. The interesting thing, can y'all imagine this in a in this period of time there being some place that could seat 20,000 people? You know, not
Yeah.
that many cities where could even handle that many people. So, and this is a picture of the port, I believe this is around or the.
Really?
Yeah, I forget what this is exactly called. Let me look at see if I got.
Promenade, possibly.
This is the wall, the Maritime Caesarea wall. Yeah, the walls.
So protected the city.
Yeah, and I believe this is another view. This is the amphitheater. This let the the ruins of the amphitheater.
Oh.
And I have a drawing of it here. Says this building was renovated and modified several times in the first and second centuries AD. In its final stage, the arena was shortened and the southern section of the building was converted into an oval amphitheater for gladiatorial combats and hunting games. Finally, in the Byzantine period, the arena was filled in and built over. So they filled
Interesting.
it in.
I guess they didn't do
Oh.
theater back in the Byzantine area.
And this is it says the youth of this of India was much impressed with the Temple of Augusta, situated in an elevation and surmounded by the colossal statue. Y'all, give me a second. I got to get down here and get where I can read the rest of it. Of the Roman Emperor. Could probably guess that. Right, and this says directly opposite the harbor entrance on a high platform was the Temple of Caesar, marked for its beauty and for its great size. Josephus' Jewish War, 1414, King Herod built this magnificent temple that Josephus described. Caesarea, mainly religious monument when he founded the city 22 through 10 BCE. Herod's temple stood on this site. The temple platform, archaeologists are now trying to identify the temple's foundation beneath the later buildings. Meanwhile, a few architectural fragments from the temple have come to light, shades, parts of the drawing. These allow the computer reconstructions of the building's colonnade. That's pretty impressive, isn't it?
Interesting.
And there are the ruins of Caesar.
Wow. A lot of stonework.
Yeah. Okay, this is kind of interesting too. Let me read this to y'all because it's we just read about it. So said, nope, we just skipped off of it. There we go.
At the bleachers?
Said the second afternoon of their stay, the three men attended a performance in an enormous amphitheater that could seat 20,000 persons. And that night they went to a Greek play at this theater. These were the first exhibitions of this sort Gannett had ever witnessed and asked Jesus many questions. So that's a picture of what's left of it. Kind of interesting. I don't remember what this one was. Well, this is King Herod's Hippodrome. And I'll let y'all look at this on your own in the on the website if you'd like to. And this shows some of the says the moment of the third day they paid formal visit to the governor's palace, for Caesarea was the capital of Palestine. And this is part of the waterworks that washed out
Wow.
the streets.
That's
Have
cool.
you
Noticed something here?
What's
These arches are the first arches of anything I've seen historic that are not, I guess the proper word is symmetrical, especially the one on the left as we're looking at
Yeah.
it. And from my limited knowledge, that is a weak arch.
It probably is, and there's no gold around the outside of it, so that's definitely not McDonald's, right?
You know, you're right. I don't know
Well,
how they lived. I just, beyond my understanding.
the palace vaults where they served several for several things over the years, and there's a thing. Okay, how are we doing? 53? Okay, let's try to get one more paragraph in here at least. Gary, would you take this one?
Okay. At their end, there also lodged a merchant from Mongolia.
Right.
And since this Far Eastern talked Greek fairly well, Jesus had several long visits with him. This man was most impressed with Jesus's philosophy of life and never forgot his words of wisdom regarding the living of the heavenly life.
while on earth by means of daily submission to the will of the Heavenly Father. This merchant was a Taoist, and he had thereby become a strong believer in the doctrine of the universal deity. When he returned to Mongolia, he began to teach these advanced truths to the neighbors and to his business associates. And as a direct result of such activities, his eldest son decided to become a Taoist priest. This young man exerted a great influence in behalf of advanced truth throughout his lifetime and was followed by a son and a grandson who likewise were devoutly devotedly loyal to the doctrine of the one God, the supreme ruler of heaven.
Okay, so even back then, people dedicated their whole life sometimes to teaching the doctrines that were truth. And you wonder why I spend so much time on the 26-week class we had, and where I just finished the book. I sent it out to everybody, the rough copy, today. I don't know if anybody got it yet, but
I got the notice.
yeah, it's out there. I had to tweak a few things tonight in it, but the reason we do that is we have to constantly spread these doctrines of one God and the Trinity and all these doctrines that are so important to be passed on generation to generation. And it's all about teaching from the Urantia book. Okay, so that's why people do this thing. It's interesting that there are so many good lessons in this paper on this tour to Rome. It's just amazing, all these little gems that's in it. And we're going to quit there because I want to get the prayer in tonight again. So let's bring the prayer up. Okay.
I'm going to claim something.
Yes.
Every night when I'm late, you make me read the long passages.
Yeah.
Tonight, I was right on time.
Okay.
So I get to read the prayer.
Oh, that's fine. Go ahead. Go
Okay.
for it.
Prayer of acceptance. I believe that God is my paradise father and that only by faith am I saved. No sacrifice is necessary. By the same faith, I became a child of God and know that all men and women are my brothers and sisters. We know the Son of God, the sovereign of our universe of Nebadon, as Christ Michael, Jesus of Nazareth. By allowing the will of God to become my will, I will someday stand in the presence of the Paradise Father. In the name of Jesus, in the name of Christ Michael, Jesus of Nazareth, amen.
Amen. Amen. And thank y'all all at home for coming and watching our ranting and raving. Yeah, hope you enjoyed it. And we will be back here Thursday to continue on from here. So thanks,
Thank you
y'all.
so much.
You're welcome. Thanks, everybody, for coming. And we will see y'all Thursday. Okay?
Okay.
All right. Good night, everybody.
Good night.